to our podcast. My name is Dr. Peter Juliet. I'm an orthopedic surgeon in Kenya, and today we'll be discussing on osteomyelitis. Osteomyelitis is defined as an acute or chronic inflammatory process involving destruction and apposition of new bone, secondary to an infection. The infection can be caused by pyogenic organisms, including bacteria, fungi, and mycobacteria. The incidence is about 20 per 100,000. However, this has been increasing with the increase in prevalence of diabetes. The rates are slightly high in male individuals and increase with age, particularly in patients over 60 years of age. What is the etiology? The first one is hematogenous osteomyelitis, and as the name suggests, it's caused by hematogenous dissemination of a pathogen or organisms entering the bloodstream. This then causes infiltration of the bone marrow and finally some localized and systemic reactions. The second etiology is exogenous osteomyelitis. This can occur from contiguous spread or via direct inoculation. So with the contiguous spread, it's associated with previous surgery, trauma, wounds, or poor vascularity. With the direct inoculation form, it's caused by penetrating injuries, open fractures, or surgical contamination. We find that hematogenous osteomyelitis is more common in children and adolescents, whereas exogenous osteomyelitis is more common in adults. The most common pathogen causing osteomyelitis is Staphylococcus aureus. However, there are some organisms that we see happening in certain groups. For example, Staphylococcus epidermidis in patients with prosthetics, group B streptococci in diabetic patients with foot ulcers and pressure ulcers, Salmonella in patients with sickle cell anemia, Klebsiella in patients with UTI. However, note that the commonest organism is still Staphylococcus aureus. During history taking and examination, identify risk factors such as any history of UTI, URTI, poor nutrition, history of dialysis, any presence of open fractures or soft tissue injuries. Ask about history of IV drug use, any immunosuppression risk such as diseases like diabetes, long-term use of steroids, or even history of atherosclerosis. When it comes to classification, there are a number of systems that one can use, but the common ones used are the timing classification, which is now based on the duration of symptoms, and this is classified into acute, subacute, and chronic. And the other classification that is good to know is the Ciani and Mada classification. Now, how do these patients present? For the acute osteomyelitis, it may present gradually with onset over a few days, but usually manifests within 2 weeks. Patients have some local symptoms such as erythema, swelling, and warmth at the site of infection. And there may be a dull pain that may occur unprovoked by motion. They may also present with some constitutional symptoms such as fever or chills. With chronic osteomyelitis, the symptoms now are over a longer duration of time. And as with acute osteomyelitis, they may present with swelling, pain, and erythema at the site of infection, but constitutional symptoms like fever and chills are less common. The symptoms in chronic osteomyelitis can also be recurrent, lasting weeks to months, and sometimes may also be cyclical. Other possible localized findings you might get is deformity, impaired healing of the overlying wounds, some local sinus tract formation, perhaps draining pus, and positive probe to bone test. Just of note, the positive probe to bone test is a very strong suggestive of osteomyelitis, especially in diabetic patients. Once you have the proper history and physical examination done, laboratory data is useful, but usually nonspecific for osteomyelitis. These findings may or may not be there. So request for complete blood counts, looking for leukocytosis and the differentials. Look out for elevated ESR and CRP, especially CRP, which is the most sensitive. Blood cultures may be positive in hematogenous osteomyelitis, and if features of sepsis are present, do a full diagnostic workup for sepsis. Plain radiograph is usually the initial imaging of choice, but may have a delay of about 14 days before the appearance of findings that would be suggestive of osteomyelitis. They're however used to exclude differential diagnosis for osteomyelitis. They're typical, no pathological findings in acute form, but in the subacute and chronic form, there's usually some evidence of disruption of the soft tissue planes, some bone destruction or periosteal reaction. Some patients may have a sequestrum, which is a devitalized bone, and it usually serves as a nidus for infection. and might also see involucrum, which is now formation of new bone around an area of bony necrosis. Practice looking at different plane radiographs to be able to differentiate the findings, including the different types of periosteal reaction and what the causes or what they might be suggestive of. The other imaging modality that can be used is the MRI, with or without contrast. It has the highest combined sensitivity and specificity and can detect early infection within 3 to 5 days. However, it's not routinely used. It's only used especially when radiograph findings are very nonspecific. So what do we see in the MRI? Acute and subacute osteomyelitis is characterized by cortical destruction, bone marrow inflammation, and soft tissue involvement. For the chronic osteomyelitis, on the other hand, it's characterized by fibrotic scarring of the marrow. The use of the contrast does not really improve the detection of the disease, but it helps provide a distinction between necrotic tissue, abscess, or a phlegmon. We can also use a CT scan only to assist in diagnosis and surgical planning, but it's not routinely used. There's a role of nuclear medicine, but with very limited indications. And the types that we use usually is the technetium bone scan and the gallium bone scan. There's also the bone culture and biopsy. This is done as either open or percutaneously when imaging findings and blood cultures are inconclusive. It's essential in establishing the histopathological diagnosis in osteomyelitis, identifying the causative pathogen, and providing susceptibility data, especially to direct antibiotic therapy. Bone biopsy cultures is a confirmatory test for osteomyelitis and should be performed unless there are characteristic imaging features of osteomyelitis and positive blood cultures. Remember, one crucial differential diagnosis of osteomyelitis is tumors, so always biopsy infections and culture tumors. The success of treatment in osteomyelitis is heavily dependent on patient factors, things such as their immunocompetency and nutritional status. Also, the location of the infection. For example, the metaphyseal infections, they heal better than mid-diaphyseal infections. And also, the more severe the injury, the worse prognosis that usually we have. Now, non-operative treatment involves various aspects: intravenous antibiotics, pain management, nutritional management, and hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is now available in our country. Antibiotics should be tailored to a specific organism, preferably after bone biopsy is obtained. But if there are signs of sepsis or rapidly progressing infection, empiric antibiotic therapy should be administered based on the common organisms. The duration of antibiotic therapy is normally 4 to 8 weeks, but in rare occasions, patients who are very unsuitable for surgery, they can remain on long-term suppressive antibiotic therapy. Chronic osteomyelitis and acute osteomyelitis sometimes can actually end up being refractory to antibiotic treatment, and these patients will require surgical intervention. The options that we give them usually are debridement of the necrotic bone tissue with a plan for stabilization. If they have an infected prosthetic joint or foreign body, it must be removed to promote remission. If it's a patient who has an overlying abscess, incision and drainage has to be done. And then very important is management of the dead spaces once you've removed all this necrotic tissue. And the goal of this is usually to replace that dead space with the dead bone space together with scar tissue with vascularized tissue. And the options include antibiotic beads, VAC closure, vascularized bone grafts, and flaps after the infection has been completely removed. Amputation may be considered in severe disease. However, this should be a completely last option as there are many limb salvage procedures that can be done. So what are these complications of osteomyelitis? There are quite a number, and these include septic arthritis, pathological fractures, squamous cell carcinoma, sinus tract formation, bone deformities. They can have systemic infection or even just a contiguous soft tissue infection. The recurrence rate is about 30%, quite high, despite any surgical debridement and long-term antibiotics. And the prognosis is poor, especially in patients who have any immunocompetency issues or with major nutritional or systemic disorders. So in summary, osteomyelitis is a very common condition that we see in orthopedic surgery. It has a heavy burden on the patient, and it's considered to be one of those complications that are an orthopedic surgeon's nightmare. It's important to identify the risk factors, investigate the patient adequately, and offer them the best possible options of treatment. Thank you very much for listening.